You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to episode 453 of our Civil War podcast. My name is Rich.
And I'm Tracy. Hello y'all, welcome to the podcast.
It's been a while since we covered any aspect of the War on the Waters, so with this episode we're going to bring you guys a swashbuckling tale of derring do, worthy of Errol Flynn.
Our tale begins during the last days of January 1864, when hand-picked groups of Confederate sailors and Marines from three southern ports boarded trains for a secret mission in North Carolina.
A few weeks earlier, Robert E. Lee had dispatched troops to North Carolina from Virginia for an attack on New Bern. The town, located on a peninsula at the confluence of the Neuse and Trent Rivers, had been a federal stronghold since Union forces captured it in March 1862. Now, here in the early days of 1864, Major General George Pickett, of Gettysburg fame, would lead the Confederate effort to kick the Yankees out of New Bern. He marshaled his force at Kinston, some 40 miles upstream from New Bern, and planned how to carry out the assault.
One part of the attack would involve a thrust down the Neuse by a waterborne force of rebel sailors and Marines. In small boats and launches, those Confederates would descend on New Bern and attempt to surprise and capture or destroy enemy vessels stationed there. Commander John Taylor Wood, already a Confederate naval hero, was assigned to lead the expedition.
The 32-year-old Wood had a prominent pedigree. His father, Robert, had been Surgeon General of the U.S. Army. His mother, a daughter of President Zachary Taylor, and a relative by marriage of Confederate President Jefferson Davis. Wood had served in the antebellum U.S. Navy, but when war came, he cast his lot with the Confederacy. He commanded a gun crew on CSS Virginia in her epic battle at Hampton Roads with USS Monitor.
In August 1863, Wood had led a raiding party that surprised, boarded, and captured the enemy steamers Satellite and Reliant at the mouth of the Rappahannock River. Using those two ships, over the next few days, he then seized several more enemy vessels. Two more captured ships only added to his growing reputation as one of the most daring officers in the Confederate Navy.
The rebel sailors assigned to Wood's latest venture, drawn from Confederate naval commands at Wilmington, North Carolina, Charleston, South Carolina, and Richmond, Virginia, gathered at Kinston on the Neuse River upstream from New Bern. From Virginia, Lieutenant George Gift brought a force from the James River Squadron with boats sent by railroad on flat cars, arriving early on the morning of January 31st. The other contingents also came in by train about noon the same day. Including the 25 Marines led by Captain Thomas Wilson, Wood had about 250 men for his mission.
One of Wood's earlier messages to Gift was typical of his attention to detail and his intensity. On January 25th, he wrote, "As soon as you receive this, get the boats on the cars, ready for a move at any moment. Move promptly on the receipt of orders. See that all the men have blankets and jackets, cooking utensils, a few axes. Each man armed with rifles, cutlasses, and, as far as possible, revolvers. Boats should have oars, boat hooks, and all necessary fittings, but lose no time for these things. I will bring spare ones.
The mission was cloaked in secrecy, but even as the various detachments traveled toward Kinston, the Confederate sailors and Marines knew that any operation involving wood promised danger and adventure. Daniel Conrad, a Navy surgeon, noted, "So perfectly secret and well guarded was our destination that not until we arrived did we have the slightest idea of where we were going or what was the object of the raid. We suspected, however, from the name of the commander, that it would be nervous work, as he had a reputation for boarding, capturing, and burning the enemy's gunboats on many previous occasions."
Knowing they were reporting to Wood, the rebels coming down from Richmond used this to their advantage when their train stopped for refueling at stations. Conrad remembered how the young men, quote, "full of their fun and deviltry," end quote, were surrounded by, quote, "the many pretty girls gathered there, who asked all manner of questions as to this strange sight of boats on cars filled with men in a naval uniform."
The flirtatious rebels boasted that they were going to board, capture, and destroy as many Yankee ships as possible. Their blushing admirers asked for flags and other trophies taken from the enemy, promising kisses in return.
Any and all romantic notions vanished when the rebels coming down from Richmond reached Kinston and their boats were put into the cold waters of the Neuse on the afternoon of January 31st.
Before setting off downriver, Wood divided the boats into two groups. Wood himself would lead one detachment, while the other was commanded by Lieutenant Benjamin Loyal. Since the strike on New Bern was planned to take place in the dark of night, to help them determine friend from foe, the men were instructed to tie a strip of white cloth to their left arms above the elbow, and told that when challenged, their watchword would be Sumter.
The plan was for the Confederates to, quote unquote, attack and cut out four or five Yankee vessels believed to be stationed at New Bern. Ideally, the rebels would then use one or more of the captured ships to attack and seize other enemy vessels, as Wood had been able to do previously.
When Wood told the men about their mission, they could hardly contain their excitement. In the words of Surgeon Conrad, "It was a grand scheme and was received by the older men with looks of admiration and with rapture by the young midshipmen."
Just before sundown, Wood ordered all the boats to assemble and offered a prayer. Lieutenant Loyal remembered, quote, "It was a solemn and impressive scene. Then, with muffled oars, a single line was formed, and we pulled with measured strokes down the stream."
Navigating the narrow, winding channel of the Neuse in the dark meant the Confederates didn't reach New Bern until about 4 a.m. on the morning of Monday, February 1st. Of the trip downriver, Loyal would say, quote, "The night was so dark that we could not see each other, and often the leading boat ran into a shoal, got aground, and the whole line would be jumbled up in a crowd."
To add to the level of difficulty, as the rebels neared New Bern, they found there was a thick fog blanketing the river. Loyal wrote, "Every eye was strained to see a ship. We searched in vain to find something afloat, although we got close enough to the wharf to hear talking, probably the sentries on the dock. Not a gunboat was to be seen."
With dawn nearing, a frustrated Wood ordered the boats back upriver some 3 or 4 miles to Bachelor's Creek, where the men could rest in concealment after rowing some 60 miles since the previous afternoon. Loyal admitted, quote, "There was nothing to be done but find some refuge out of sight until next night, but it was hard letting down from the pitch of excitement we had been under, the unbending of the bow that had been strung for action."
While the raiders rested throughout the day on February 1st, they could hear the thunder of battle in the distance as Pickett attacked the New Bern defenses. Late in the afternoon, taking one of the 15 boats, Wood and Loyal went downstream to spy on the harbor. This time, in the light of day, they spotted an enemy gunboat, USS Underwriter.
Wood was disappointed no other enemy ships were present in the harbor, but he nonetheless decided to attack Underwriter that night. Underwriter was built in 1852 in Brooklyn as a merchant vessel. The 175-foot-long, wooden-hulled, side-wheel steamer now mounted four guns. The makeshift gunboat and her 80-man crew were commanded by acting master Jacob Westerfeldt, a native North Carolinian who had sided with the Union.
After her purchase by the Navy and being fitted out as a gunboat, Underwriter joined the Federal North Atlantic Blockading Squadron in October 1861 and saw extensive service along the North Carolina coast. She had been stationed at New Bern for just a few weeks at the time of the Confederates' attack on the place.
Wood may have set his sights on capturing Underwriter, but the task would not be easy. The enemy vessel was anchored under the guns of two Union forts, Forts Stevenson and Anderson. After completing their reconnaissance, Wood and Loyal returned upriver to the rebels' hiding spot, and then, shortly after midnight, on the morning of Tuesday, February 2nd, after another prayer, the raiders set off.
Since there was only one enemy ship to attack, Wood apparently didn't take all his force this time. Loyal noted that the cutting out expedition consisted of two columns with four boats in each. The column led by Wood would board Underwriter forward, while Loyal's boats would go aft.
Loyal later remembered how, quote, "The night was very dark and gloomy, and we could not see a light anywhere, except an occasional glimmer about the town. The stroke of the muffled oars was almost noiseless, and suddenly the dark hull of the ship loomed up."
G.E. Allen, acting third assistant engineer on Underwriter, later said that about 2:45 a.m., lookout spotted, quote, "several boats filled with men coming down the river. The night was very dark, and they were not seen until they had approached within 100 yards. They were hailed as soon as seen, but instead of answering, cried out, 'Give way strong.' We then found out that they were filled with the enemy."
One of the voices the startled Federals heard belonged to Wood, who, according to Surgeon Conrad, kicked off the attack by bellowing, "Give way hard! Board at once!" As the alarm was raised on Underwriter, calling all hands to quarters, there was the pop of revolvers being fired and the deeper bang of muskets. In this initial exchange of fire, the Confederate Marines proved their worth. A few had been assigned to each boat, and now they stood in the bows and fired as the rebel sailors, their backs to Underwriter, bent hard over their oars. A newspaper correspondent from the Charleston Mercury, who had accompanied the expedition, reported, quote, "As we came up to the ship, they rose and delivered their fire, taking accurate aim, reloading, still under heavy fire from the Yankees."
Surgeon Conrad wrote, "The long black sides of the gunboat, with men's heads and shoulders visible, could be distinctly seen by the line of red fire, and we realized immediately that the only place of safety for us was on board of her, for the fire was very destructive."
Conrad went on to say that the coxswain in his boat was a big, burly Englishman who was encouraging the crew with, quote-unquote, "gesture and loud word," while steering with the tiller between his knees, while brandishing a pistol in each hand. The doctor recalled that the man, quote, "suddenly fell forward on us, dead, a ball having struck him fairly in the forehead."
As their boats banged against Underwriter's hull, fore and aft, the rebels flung grappling hooks over the sides and clambered up under fire. Wood, Loyal, and engineer E.J. Gill were among the first Confederates to reach the gunboat's deck. Gill crumpled, killed by a shot to the head, but more and more shrieking rebels took his place.
Among the attackers was Midshipman J.T. Scharf, who recalled that the rebels, quote, were soon scrambling with cutlass and pistol in hand to the deck with a rush and a wild cheer that rung across the waters, the firing from the enemy never ceasing for one moment.
Loy was in the midst of it all. He said, now the fighting was furious and at close quarters. Our men were eager, and as one would fall, another came on. Not one faltered or fell back. The crackling of firearms and the rattle of cutlasses made a deafening din.
The surprised Federals were soon overpowered by the onrushing Confederates. Loyal continued, quote, they fell back under the hurricane deck before the steady attack of our men, and at that time I heard the cheers and the rush of our comrades from forward, and I knew we had them. In a short time I heard the cry, we surrender!
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas, plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
The garrisons of the nearby federal forts had been alerted by the sounds of combat on Underwriter, and once those sounds ceased and it became clear that rebels had seized the gunboat, the Yankees on shore began to direct musket and artillery fire at the captured ship.
Before the attack, each rebel sailor had been assigned stations aboard the gunboat, and they now manned those posts to try to get Underwriter underway and escape with their prize. The gunboat's anchor chains were slipped and other preparations hurriedly made to sail, but then it was discovered that Underwriter's boiler fires were banked, and so there was little steam to move her.
While under increasing fire from shore, the rebels tried to tow Underwriter with their boats, but found it was impossible to move her. Reluctantly, deciding they wouldn't be able to escape with their prize, Wood gave orders for the raiders to load their wounded and the prisoners into the boats. Then Underwriter was set on fire.
After the fighting had ceased, as the rebels had collected their prisoners, they had searched for the captain of their prize, but some of the captured Union sailors told them that Westerfeldt had been among those who jumped overboard to escape during the battle. Engineer Allen, though, was among about 20 unlucky prisoners who were hustled into Underwriter's whaleboat as the Confederates started to head back upriver.
However, as they pulled away from the blazing gunboat, the Federals realized that only two Confederates were guarding them. One of the rebels, steering in the stern, suddenly realized the same thing and shouted to a nearby boat to come alongside and provide more guards.
Allen, seated in the stern near the shouting rebel, seized his chance. He said the other boat, quote, was turning to come back when I snatched the cutlass from his belt and told the men to pull for their lives, end quote. The other Confederate and a few of the Federals took the opportunity to dive overboard and swim for it, but Allen and the others, with their captive, directed the whaleboat toward shore, where it grounded near one of the forts.
Meanwhile, as the raiders, with the rest of their prisoners, rowed away, they kept turning to see the burning federal gunboat. The Charleston Mercury correspondent reported that, quote, "In 5 minutes after our boats left the side, the Underwriter was one mass of flames, burning up the bodies of the Yankees killed in the action. Seeing the vessel well on fire, we turned once more up the Neuse and pulled away from the town."
Underwriter's end came about 5 a.m. The Mercury reporter wrote, "Although hidden from our view, we could see, by sudden flashes upon the sky, and by the dull, heavy booming sound which came to us upon the air, the shell room was reached, and that the explosion had begun."
After the flames reached Underwriter's powder room and she blew up, she would burn down to the waterline. The rebels rowed about 6 miles upriver to Swift Creek, where they linked back up with the rest of their boats and where Confederate cavalry had established a small camp.
Arriving at Swift Creek after daybreak, the raiders unloaded their wounded, dead, and prisoners. Dying just as they reached the rendezvous was Midshipman Palmer Saunders, who was badly wounded during the combat aboard Underwriter and who had been tended to by Surgeon Conrad. The doctor recalled how, before the attack, as the men had been about to set off downriver in the boats, several of the boyish midshipmen were chattering away about the heroics they expected to perform while boarding and seizing the enemy gunboat. However, in the midst of the boasting, Conrad heard one of the midshipmen ask, "I wonder, boys, how many of us will be up in those stars by tomorrow morning?" Conrad said the midshipman who asked that question was Palmer Saunders, who was buried with the other rebel dead near the riverbank.
As the prisoners were assembled, Lieutenant Loyal was surprised when one of the Yankees called out to him. Loyal then recognized the man as a pre-war shipmate of his from USS Congress. As the two men spoke, the Yankee pointed out another Congress shipmate among the federal wounded. After that, the Confederate cavalry troopers took charge of the prisoners and escorted them to Kinston.
Pickett's land attack on New Bern and Wood's seizure and burning of Underwriter had shaken the Federals, but Pickett's assault failed to crack the Yankee defenses, and other Union gunboats soon arrived to replace Underwriter and help protect the town. On February 4th, from Kinston, Wood sent a message to Confederate Secretary of the Navy Stephen Mallory, reporting, "The force under my command boarded and captured last night the U.S. gunboat Underwriter, 4 guns, 90 men and officers. Her position within musket range of several strong works, one of which was raking the vessel during the time we had possession, and not having steam, caused me to burn her." End quote. Wood gave his losses as 7 killed, 13 wounded, and 4 missing.
Federal losses were 9 killed, 20 wounded, and 25 taken prisoner.
From Kinston, the raiders dispersed, returning to their regular duty stations. Heading northward to Virginia, the members of the James River Squadron remembered their vow to the pretty young women at the train stops, and they made miniature flags to give them. Conrad said, "The young ladies were called out at each place, and after the dead were lamented, the wounded in the cars cared for, then the midshipmen brought out their flags, recalled their promises, and demanded their redemption. Immediately there commenced a lively burst of laughter and denials, followed by a slight resistance, and the whole bevy were kissed, and but for the whistle of the train ordering them away, they would have continued indefinitely."
The capture and burning of Underwriter proved to be of little military value to the rebels, even if it was one of the few bright spots in Pickett's failed campaign against New Bern. Still, the destruction of Underwriter was a boost to Confederate morale, as the Southern public reveled in the newspaper accounts that trumpeted the courage and audacity of Wood and his raiders.
Wood and his men received the official thanks of the Confederate Congress. Wood and Loyal also earned promotions. Secretary of the Navy Stephen Mallory described the mission as a, quote-unquote, brilliant exploit. In August 1864, Wood assumed command of the commerce raider CSS Tallahassee, embarking on a cruise that took him up along the northeastern coast of the United States to Nova Scotia and back, during which he captured some 30 vessels.
John Taylor Wood was in Richmond when the Confederate capital was evacuated in April 1865. He accompanied Jefferson Davis as the rebel president fled southward. Having been branded a pirate in the Northern press, Wood feared he would be executed as such if he was caught by the Federals.
When Jefferson Davis was captured by Union cavalry in Georgia in May 1865, Wood managed to escape to Florida, then sailed to Cuba with Confederate Secretary of War John Breckinridge. He eventually settled in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and died there in July 1904 at the age of 73. The cutting out and destruction of Underwriter proved typical of John Taylor Wood's daring. The Charleston Mercury correspondent admitted, "I am entirely unable to do justice to this naval battle, and I trust some other pen, more worthy, will hand it down among the records of the war. All fought well. There was no halting, no cowardice. Every man stood at his post and did his duty. From Commander Wood down, no one faltered."
That means it's time for this episode's book recommendation. And our recommendation this time is The Civil War at Sea by Craig L. Simons.
This is a re-recommendation, but it's been a while, so we're happy to bring Craig Simons' fine book to your attention again. He's an excellent naval historian, and if you pick up The Civil War at Sea, it'll certainly help fill in the gaps in our coverage of that aspect of the war. The war was primarily fought on land, so that's where most of our attention is focused, as you may have noticed. Anyway,
don't forget you can find a list of all of our book recommendations if you head over to the podcast website, which is www.civilwarpodcast.org.
Also at the website, you can find information on joining the Strawfoot Brigade over on Patreon and supporting the podcast in that way. Just yesterday, we released members episode number 151, in which we looked at a certain class of women who could be found in every Civil War army, the company laundress. These washerwomen were officially licensed by the armies of both sides, and they went wherever the soldiers went, which meant sharing hardship and danger. Interesting stuff. In any case, we want to give a shout out to the newest members of the Strawfoot Brigade, so thank you to Mike C., Jeff B., Albert S., and Sarah B.
Thanks to all of you for listening to this episode of the podcast. Rich and I do hope that you'll join us again next time, but until then, take care.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.